what is the Spider-Man? With great power comes great responsibility. All right, I'm going to make a play on that. Not exactly. I'm not saying I'm Peter Parker. But
you're my Peter Parker.
I have, my wife and I have this restaurant that's at Disney Springs. A lot of people come into the Springs. So there is an obligation, a responsibility to do something that is not just the normal place. Mm-hmm. And I hope that we do something here that is not just what everybody would expect out of a solid wine bar. There is the responsibility to do something cooler and better.
There's nothing normal about what you're doing here in a wonderful way. Well, hello, it's Nikki Lamberti here, coming to you from Sonoma County, California, and thank you for joining us for our 50th podcast episode. I cannot believe it. With weekly episodes, that means we're almost at our one-year anniversary, and I just want to say thank you so much if you're a first-time listener. Excited to have you here, and if you have been listening all along the way, I see you, and I am so grateful for your listenership and your support. Now, I knew I wanted to do something special for our 50th episode, and the stars just aligned with the timing, and Michael and I had a trip to Walt Disney World in Orlando, where I used to work, and while we were there, we were lucky enough to sit down with George Meliotis at Wine Bar George at the Disney Springs. Now, for those of you who are Disney-philes, whether you are fellow cast members and employees like me or just enthusiast, you probably know that name and hopefully you have visited Wine Bar George at the Disney Springs. It is a fantastic location with over 200 wines that you can try literally by the ounce, by the glass, or by the bottle. And George recently won the best short wine list in the world by the World of Fine Wine, and we get to talk all about that. Last year, when I was flying home from a Walt Disney World trip in the Orlando airport, I was leaving out of the new C terminal, and I was surprised and delighted to see that Wine Bar George actually has a location in the airport, and he's got over 70 wines by the ounce, by the glass, and by the bottle, and beautiful food. So I sat and had a charcuterie board, some gorgeous wine while I waited for my flight to depart. So if you're passing through Terminal C, you can check that out as well. He started his journey with Disney Food and Beverage and was part of the opening team of what is still one of my favorite restaurants on Disney property, the California Grill up at the top of the Contemporary Resort, where you can see the Magic Kingdom fireworks with a glass of champagne in your hand. One of my favorite things to do when I visit. And then he spent some time with Darden restaurants. And during that time, George was one of the founders of Seasons 52 restaurant, another favorite in the area. During that time, he achieved what only 280 other people on the planet have done. He is a master sommelier, and we talk all about what that process was like and what inspired him to go for that. We talk about his thoughts on Thanksgiving and other holiday meals being train wrecks and what type of wine can belong on that type of table. And he was kind enough to open and share a beautiful bottle with Michael and I in our sip spotlight this week. Hint, it is a French wine. I get his take on a controversial word in the wine world. And then we took some of your listener questions that you submitted and just had a phenomenal conversation. We've got so much to get to. I cannot wait. Here we go with Master Sommelier George Meliotis of Wine Bar George. First and foremost, as a wine nerd, as a longtime Disney cast member, and as a foodie, my head is exploding a little sitting here with you. Because I feel like I'm in the presence of food and wine royalty.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to go that far.
Well, you're rolling your eyes.
I'll let you do it. It's all good.
Thank you, George, for having Michael.
She's
and
definitely
I here.
Talked a lot about you. She's been nervous about this day.
No
I want
need.
You to know that she's like really looks
no
up to
no need
you.
To be nervous. I'm excited to get
I'm
to
excited.
Talk.
I'm excited. This is amazing. So thanks for having us. So as we were chatting, you started to tell me about you and your wife and getting all of this started. So I feel like that's a great place for us to jump in. How did we get here?
It is an interesting story. When I was working at Darden, helping run Seasons 52 in the Capitol Grill and Eddie V's and their whole beverage programs, that's 120 restaurants and lots to do and flying around in airplanes. And
it's horrible.
There were great things. There are not so great things. Uh-huh. And so part of the window into here and why we love here and doing what we do, when Disney offered, hey, do you want to build your own restaurant here and run it? My wife and I had this thought that there'd be local business because I was born and raised here. She was born and raised here. So we'd have local business and we'd have tourist business. And they'd be two kind of separate buckets of business. And when you think about tourist business, a lot of times the thought is, all right, they're here once and then they'd go. But the heart of what we do, just like when you asked about our function that I do here, the heart of that function is repeat tourist business. And so there is a subset of Disney people who they come once a year, twice a year, three times a year, depending upon their financial wherewithal. And those are the guests that to us come back and they love the fact that we do the six wines, three whites, three reds, but they're never the same six. I always move them around.
Smart. Yeah.
And so if they want to play the game,
yeah. They
can play the game every week, they can play it every other week, they can play it when they're in town. So we get locals who come out all the time,
uh-huh. People
who've been to like 20 of them, and then we get the people who, hey, I'm down here for 3 months, and they'll come to one each month or two each month while they're down here for the winter.
You have a special snowbird event for those people.
they're ready to come. And nothing makes me more happy than when, whether it's the middle of summer or the snowbird thing, when a guest comes and tells me, yeah, we checked in, we put our bags in the room, and we came right over here. And I'm like, good, there's somebody who's got their priorities right.
That you just described me, right?
Okay.
So I lived here for 15 years working for the company, but when I moved to Napa and Sonoma in 2012 to study wine and make wine and work at Pride and all that stuff, I'm back here once or twice a year. We're always here.
Mm-hmm.
So technically I'm a tourist. Now I'm a specific tourist, but I cannot wait to come back here every time I'm here.
And so you are the lifeblood of what we do, seriously. And there's every single day they come in and they're like, we've been waiting to come eat at your place because we always have it for the last meal, we always have it for the first meal, whatever it may be.
It's amazing.
And yeah, it is a fun thing.
That tells you you're doing something right.
Yes, I hope so.
And these events, are these 3 on 3, is this like an hour tasting?
An hour and a half.
Hour and
usually
half
we go a little bit over time. Like today we went from noon until about 2.
And does it change as far as your demographic? Like young people doing in your 20s, 30s, 40s?
I get every single part of the demographic, which is really cool. And we even have one family from Tampa who it's two kids over 21 and the parents, and they come over.
Multi-gen wine tasting.
Absolutely.
Love.
It's as cool and as gratifying as it gets because they're like, they want their kids. And like, I think about my kids, I have two who are old enough to drink and one just not quite there yet. But we love going out and doing things as a family when we can get everybody together. The two that are older are off in other places working. But there's great joy in a family event. And that's part of the allure of the event. Part of it is learning about wine and having a little bit of fun. But the other part of it is there's so little for adults to do that's fun and entertaining and maybe educational that for an hour and a half, you can set aside everything else in your life and in your world.
Put the phone away.
Correct.
Make and some eye contact.
Yeah.
and drink some beautiful wines and taste them.
And I tell them, they drink Pickler Gruner Veltliner than we did Trimbach Gewurz, We did Dumal Chardonnay, which was delicious. Yes, as do I. We did Chanrion, Cote de Bruit, Ramirez de Piscina, Grand Reserve at 16 from Rioja, and then finished with Andrew Will Cabernet. And as I told them before, like, you can tell anybody who knows something about wine, any of the six wines you're tasting today, and they're going to back me up.
That's quite a lineup.
It's all right that you got to drink those wines.
And they journeyed across multiple countries.
Yes, and multiple styles. And one lady asked, what's the difference taste and aroma-wise between American and French oak? And I'm like, I said, wine number five has American oak, and wine number six has French oak. We're going to talk about this ourselves. So that you can discern. Now, I'll coach and help make sure we stay within the boundaries of the field. So, you know, I'm not going to say that you think the French oak smells like bubblegum, but we are going to see the difference, and you can discern the difference yourself.
Could she?
Oh, yeah, she's great.
Everyone can. Well, almost everyone can when they have them side by side. It's like a light bulb for them.
Yes, right? And it was because, and like the Ramirez de Piscina, it's got this kind of toasted coconutty soy sauce thing going on that is all about American oak, and people are like, wow, it does smell like toasted coconut. I'm like, yes, it does.
How fun.
Yeah, it was a good time.
I am going to put the link in the show notes for this episode to encourage our listeners when they are here at Walt Disney World to not only come at least for a visit, but if their schedule allows, to do an event with you and it overlaps.
That'd be awesome.
I'm actually going to encourage them to do that. Here's my question. We know about Darden for many years, but prior to that, California Grill.
Correct.
Part of the opening team, one of my still to this day most favorite restaurants.
Still
on
rock
property.
Solid restaurant.
We went up and had drinks the other day. It's nostalgic, but it's fantastic, the wine list. But prior to that, you said Orlando native. Mm-hmm. How do you get into wine? How does young George decide, oh, this is the path?
My father lost his job in 1971. He was working for STP down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and didn't have a job, or had a very high-powered job. My mom had this idea that it'd be cool to open up a humble gourmet food shop up here, that she'd seen one in a mall down in South Florida. We moved back up here to Orlando, and my dad opened it up, but my sister, my brother, and I would all go in on weekends and help out at the restaurant. Uh-huh. And so I got this early schooling in gourmet food, but in wine also, because the back of the restaurant and gourmet food shop had a wall of wine. Because it was Germanic in origin, there was 1/3 of the thing was taken up by German wine. German wine labels, while when you first look at them, are not that intuitive as
to what. Intimidating,
yes.
Yeah.
But when you learn, particularly if it's the first label you learn about, it seems all very Germanic and by the book, and you got all the keys to unlock what is going on in the wine. And so that was the first wine I learned about. And my dad would make me face the bottles and clean the bottles and make sure they had a price sticker on them. And that was my first job. But it's funny, while I learned when I was, 12, 13 years old, how to read a German wine label, by the time I was at the advanced level of Master Somm, and people were desperately trying to unlock what went on in a German wine label, I was like, why are you worried about a German wine label? They're the easiest.
I've done this since I was 10.
Correct. And I know it's not, and I would never have said anything that, but the thought was like, my dad didn't know I was going to want to become a master sommelier, but he certainly did teach me everything I needed to know about a German wine label that today I can still take and ride on. That even though German wine law has changed and morphed a little bit, all the basics are there. And even one of the other thirds of the wine selection was American wine.
All right.
And 1974 was this monumental vintage in Napa. And so we were selling like Sterling Vineyards Reserve 74, which I wish I still had a little, because I'm sure it is a delicious wine.
I've tasted, not Sterling, but I've tasted some 74s.
74s are spectacularly good.
It's close to my birth year.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're fabulous wines.
Yeah.
And at that time, Suha Newton and her husband Peter owned Sterling. And Suha would tell the story that Mr. Mondavi would come by once a week or once every 2 weeks and ask them how they were doing and say, maybe you want to do this, maybe you want to do that. and you think about the atmosphere of there's
and
a lot of business.
This is pre-Judgment of Paris, pre-76, pre-Napa Boom on the map.
Correct.
Mandavi's there and a handful of others.
Like beginning of Vegas, right? Like the Brat Pack, like all the farmers talking about it before it became this thing.
People don't understand that. Robert Mondavi and Andrei Tilichev, they went around the valley and helped everybody. Now, I'm sure they have their own personalities and their people they liked helping, and maybe others that they didn't like helping so much, I don't know. But I do know that I heard that from the horse's mouth, and that we wouldn't have known what we were doing, or we wouldn't have done it as well without their assistance.
That's so interesting, and I'm so glad that you brought that up, because people ask me about that as someone who lives and works in the wine country and works at a winery and started my own wine label. People always ask about the competition and are you allowed to tell me other places I should go visit? We talk all the time about, even now today, almost 50 years later, it's so collaborative, it's so supportive. For the most part, there's always a couple of wrenches in there, but for the most part, everyone is just helping everyone, sharing ideas, swapping ideas, sharing grapes, because you lost your grapes in a fire and I was on the other side of the road and I didn't. It's amazing.
I've sold Philip Tony's wines for a long time, and we were up there 2 years ago, and we were talking with Mr. Tony's daughter, who makes the wine now, and she was talking about during the fires, they had pretty much resigned themselves to the fact that they weren't going to have a house or a vineyard, and then out of nowhere, the Kendall Jackson family, people who were in Mount Brave right up the road, show up with their own personal fire department and save the day. Mm-hmm. And it just, that was the right thing to do in that situation.
Your neighbors.
And you're like, there's competition in the business, but there's also this beauty in Napa Valley as a group that we're gonna do things right, take care of everyone.
Yeah.
And so it really is a cool place.
It is, and it's really how Michael and I were able to get our brand off the ground with our first vintage in 19. It would not have worked if people were not so open to helping the people that still have day jobs, a nurse and a wine educator and part-time still Disney, right? We ask and we use our resources, and everyone has been so helpful to help the new little guy get started. And it's been really,
it's pretty cool, right?
And endearing, and we're so grateful.
Absolutely.
So grateful. Okay, so you mentioned Master Somm. Mm-hmm. So it's funny because when I do the research, I've read how many different numbers. There's 279 in the world, 273 in the world. No,
81.
Of course, it depends on.
281.
So
I can say this definitively right this moment now.
George says he is one of 281 people in the world on this planet to achieve a master sommelier status.
That is true.
What made you decide to go for that and to go all the way?
When I started on my journey, there are, I think, around 150. Mm-hmm. And I was running California Grill. The quartermaster sommeliers came by. We did an introductory exam. It was a really cool experience for me.
Did you ace that exam?
I did all right. I did well enough that they said, hey, you should think about this.
Yeah.
And so that started the journey, but the journey was still a 10-year journey from when I took the intro exam to when I passed. Mm-hmm. And even with my good base, you have life and you have job changes and you have kids and you have other things, but you gotta be obsessed to pass it, and obsessed in
that's
a good
weird
way.
Yeah, it's
because
obsessive.
It is, and still to this day, while there are more support structures around, it's still self-directed. And from when you make wine, at some point there's all the help, but at another point, you got to do the work. And if you don't want to do the work, then all right, it probably won't happen if you don't want to do the work.
Yeah, time to live on.
And so we get lots of people come in and say, oh, it'd be cool to be a master sommelier. And it would be cool, absolutely. But at some point, if the person is serious about talking about it, you got to realize that there's something else that you're going to give up, or maybe two somethings else that you're going to give up if you really want to become a master sommelier.
What did you have to give up?
Any free time that I had for 10 years.
You were already married, though, at the time, right?
I was already married.
God bless Leanne for dealing with that portion of your journey.
So a lot of people talk about, oh, my wife supports me, or there's a good woman behind every successful man. And that's not the deal with my relationship, both professionally and personally, with my wife. We are a team, we are equals, we help each other in every single way. So it's not one behind the other, it's two right next to each other, getting done what needs to get done. And we're both fairly driven is the word, but we like to have fun, we like to eat well, we like to do well in business. None of the three kids are in jail.
Hey, look at that.
Two of them have jobs where they don't ask us for money. One's still in college, so.
And they all like wine?
Oh, they all love wine.
Like they had a choice.
But the thing is, like, the bigger thing for us is they all like to go out to dinner and enjoy each other and enjoy friends and realize what drinking is for and what wine is for in particular. And it's not this binge thing, but it's this thing to be respected and to be enjoyed.
Amen. When the Meliodas family is going out in the Orlando area for a family celebration, where are you going?
So we'll come here sometimes, but there is a restaurant in Longwood, which is a northern suburb of Orlando. So it's a good 30, 40 minutes from here called Enzo's, not the Enzo's here. And it's been around since I was in high school. And my dad and Enzo, who has since passed away, were very good friends. And when I was in high school, we'd go visit there and I'd get the ravioli. He'd pack up a second plate of ravioli for me on his china with to-go boxes. And there wasn't really a thing then. And we'd bring the china back when we came back the next time we were in the restaurant kind of thing. But he's been written up twice in the New York Times as an authentic Italian restaurant that they really didn't expect to find in Orlando. There's a lot of good water and special times at that restaurant.
Nice.
Family, not that there are not a lot of great operators here
that
we go to from time to time, but when people ask me, what's the Orlando restaurant that I go to, that's...
Sounds like you said there was a family connection.
There's a large family connection.
So. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yep.
Should we taste some wine?
Yeah.
So we're going to do what we call our sip spotlight.
Sip spotlight.
So I asked you to pull something that you wanted to share, talk about, and highlight today. So what are you pouring for us?
All right,
these
so
gorgeous burgundy glasses.
We're going to back into what exactly this wine is. So first, it's right before Thanksgiving. And your Thanksgiving meal, no matter who you are, where you are, is always a train wreck of food. Because you think about, we got
18 sides.
Exactly.
Bitter,
cranberry. All with different
sour,
flavors. And
cheesy.
Yes, yes.
Chile con queso.
If you're Michael, he makes chile con queso.
Everyone mixes their own ethnic foods into it, right? We have like chile con queso or...
But you're making my point. It's a train wreck in a good way, but it's a train wreck nonetheless.
Right.
Because you got turkey here, you got gravy here, you got cranberry sauce here, you've got sweet potato pie with marshmallow.
Doesn't even matter at that point.
Everything is... So what do you serve? Like, I remember I served a fabulously expensive bottle of Cabernet one Thanksgiving. But nobody said anything about the wine because, frankly, it didn't go all that well with everything that was on the table. And so today we're going to try something that I will probably be drinking on Thanksgiving when I sit down after we've served some people here.
You have Thanksgiving meal
here. Oh, we're open, yes.
I saw that,
365 days a year.
Wow.
And so I love Cru Beaujolais at any point in time, but for Thanksgiving... Excuse me, I think it's a pretty facile wine to go with all the different flavors. I picked a very specific maker who's near and dear to my heart. This is Chanrion Côte de Bruy, made by Nicole Chanrion. She's roughly my age, a child, grew up during the 60s and 70s, when it wasn't the easiest thing to be a female winemaker in France, and still isn't, but it was...
18%.
Yes.
On the planet, women.
All right, so there
you...
There you have
it. You're one of 281,
right?
I'm one of 18%.
18%, which is a fairly small percentage when you think about it. But now I think she's the greatest winemaker in Côte de Bruy and certainly one of the top three or four winemakers in all of Beaujolais.
This makes my wine nerd head explode as well, because today being Beaujolais Nouveau Day, and this is not Nouveau, but this is Beaujolais, my listeners, if they are regular listeners and they've done their homework, the episode that's live this week is all about Beaujolais.
What I love about their style and really good Cru Beaujolais as a whole is that it's not necessarily about power and tannin. but more about elegance and everything being in order. Because there's fruit here, there's tannin here, there's freshness here.
Beaujolais Cru is the most specific, perceived as the highest quality,
and
because
that's
it's
not
more specific.
The magic is that as you go out of the rest of Burgundy head south, when you cross over into Beaujolais and the 10 Cru are all in the north of Beaujolais, you get to granite soils. Mm-hmm. And granite soils are the difference. That's why you don't grow Pinot Noir there and you grow Gamay. Gamay likes granite. Pinot does not like granite. It is beautiful and it's elegant. And that's what I want for Thanksgiving. I don't want something to try to overpower everything, but there's too much power that's going on there. I want something that's going to play well in the sandbox with everybody.
Yeah, I need something that can just really blend right in with all those different flavors.
Gamay is the new Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. Used to, when there'd be steak, chicken, fish, vegetarian, and pasta at the table, what would you order? You'd order a bottle of Pinot Noir. Nowadays, I order Gamay more often. Mm.
There is going to be more than one bottle on your Thanksgiving table. What else are you drinking?
Yeah, I think maybe we're going to do some dry Riesling at some point, maybe to start the day.
Like while you're cooking?
Yeah.
I do that. Just enough coffee during the parade until I get all my food prepped
done.
And
then
going bubbles, we're going white, we're progressing through the day.
We'll probably start with something lean and acidic or rich and balanced with white. I'm thinking probably Selbach Oster, but a drier style. I love dry Riesling. It's still probably going to be in the 70s, maybe the 80s that day.
Sure.
But I want something with a little bit of brightness to it and leanness that'll help with the weather that day. And if you want to drink white with your Thanksgiving meal, I think dry German Riesling is a really good one. You could do that too.
Yeah.
Or a dry from Washington State.
What do you think of this now that it's opening up?
So I think about raspberry jam.
Yeah.
And I got a thing of raspberry jam here. I've got my peppermill here. I put it to about as fine as it can go with black peppercorns. So I've got raspberry jam and powdered black pepper kind of thing going on here. And then on the palate, I get that raspberry thing. And what I love about her wine in particular, just about every vintage, is we go from this ripe raspberry. These raspberries are hard to get ripe. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of times they're just sour. But I get this ripe raspberry up front, not jammy like the nose is, but ripe raspberry up front all the way to a little bit of sour raspberry at the back, but it's bright and fresh and yummy and good. And I think with the amount of acidity that's in this wine, if I wanted to play a game and take two cases of this, age it for 5 years and two cases the next vintage and the next vintage, I'd think you'd see that a little bit of age on it also would make it even more complex and deliciousness, and maybe a little bit more earthiness would come out of the wine.
You used a wine word that I want to go back to. Uh-huh. So on my first day of my wine certification at the Culinary Institute in St. Helena, our instructor, I feel like if there's only 281 in the world, you know each other. Tim Geiser.
Yeah, I know Tim very well.
Tim was my instructor, and we're all sitting there in this lecture bowl in the start of this two-month program, and he says, we are going to work on using our wine vocabulary, tasting systematically, and there's only one word you are not allowed to use in my classroom. You have Tim in your phone.
I do have Tim in my phone.
Are we going to FaceTime
him? No, I'm just saying, Tim is my friend.
You do know each other,
and
right?
I do know him.
And so he said we weren't allowed to use the word yummy.
Really?
And it was this big joke. But sometimes, man, you just taste the wine. And yeah, we can talk about all of our wine words, but sometimes there is no better word, and it's just freaking yummy. This is yummy.
There's taste good and there's yummy. And taste good sometimes doesn't cover how good the wine tastes.
Agreed.
And yummy does a little bit more cover why you like the wine. And yummy says, I want to drink more of it. Whereas taste good simply says that it tastes good. And we're splitting hairs a little bit. But I don't have any problem with yummy.
Yay.
The wine is yummy.
It is yummy. Sometimes it's just the best word for it.
Yes.
Okay, I want to just go back to the process of becoming a master sommelier. First of all, did you pass that exam on the first try?
No. I was early and often in taking the exam.
Yeah. Anyone pass it on the first
try? Oh, yeah.
There have been some.
Oh, yeah. Andy McNamara, who lives here in Tampa and is a good friend, and I help out with anything that he wants me to help him with, he passed on his first try.
Is that like a thing between the two of you?
Just checking.
Nah, I don't. If anything, he'd have the moral high ground of grinding me as opposed to me grinding him, but he would never grind.
Okay.
And there's some days you wake up and you can tell what everything is when you just put your nose in the glass. Mm-hmm. There are other days maybe where it's the wrong set of wines for you, or you don't bring your best game for whatever the reason is.
And there's a hint of a cold, and then that's it. You're done.
Correct. And athletes have good races or good games. I think there's a little bit of that going on. I think the first time that you take the exam, you can over-prepare in ways that aren't helpful. Mm-hmm. And then under-prepare in the ways that would have been helpful. There you have it.
And now, a word from our sponsor. AmericanOliveFarmer.com is a business and a website owned and operated by my friend Liz Tagami and her husband Donald. They live up in Corning, California, and I recently had Liz on the podcast where we got to taste some of her delicious olive oils, both the Arbequina and Ascolano varieties, and they're grown and made right here in California. Well, the oils were really just the tip of the iceberg, because if you check out her website, you'll see that they import gorgeous balsamic vinegar from Modena. In fact, one of them uses three of my favorite Italian wine grapes as the base of the vinegar: Trebbiano, Lambrusco, and Sangiovese. I can't say that without singing. And while on their website, if you sign up to stay in touch, you'll receive their newsletter and you'll get the fantastic recipes that Liz and Donald have created using their beautiful products. I'm so excited to introduce all of you to American Olive Farmer, and Liz has kindly created a discount code for our listeners. Use the code SIPWITHNIKKI, capital S, capital W, and capital N, SIPWITHNIKKI, for $10 off your order, and that can be anything from the site, whether it's delicious olive oils, vinegars, or even gifts. I mean, you can send someone an olive tree as a gift. How cool is that? Check out AmericanOliveFarmer.com and support this fantastic, small, California-based, woman-led business. You can even set up an olive oil subscription. Go, check it out. You're welcome.
And now, back to our show.
I will say, the whole process to me was enjoyable and was good, and I learned so much, both about wine, about myself, about so many things that, yeah, the 10-year run was a good 10-year run.
Congrats again.
Thank you.
281.
Yeah.
All right, let's do some listener questions.
Listener questions.
So this first one is from Jeff in Southern California. He is aware, as am I, when I reached out to you, that you just recently won a pretty cool award for Best in Class Short Wine List for 2024. You have over 200 wines by the bottle, by the glass, by the ounce. Yes. Jeff would like to know what goes into creating that Best in Class wine list.
It's really nice when the award says best in the world. And so getting a world award is pretty cool.
Yeah. And this is the world of fine wine?
Yes. It's not a thing where you can tell all the servers to wake up at 2 a.m. and start clicking in the computer. There's five professionals.
Oh, it's not like me voting for Dave Matthews to get inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's not the way it works.
Okay.
There are five professionals who are really competent professionals who decide who wins. And so we like that idea. But what goes into it is the list right now is the conglomeration of my experience from when I was 12 years old until I'm 62. So that's crazy. But there are plenty of other people who help. There's Zach, who's my general manager, and Jairo, and Juan, and Andrea, and Olivia, and the whole bartending team. And so all of this is much about everybody getting together and figuring out what needs to go on the list. There's the idea that everything is served by the bottle, the glass, or the ounce.
Thank you, Corbin.
That allows us to do things that weren't doable even 10 years ago. And it still boggles my mind that there's nobody who's decided to use Corbin to its full advantage. And so I think all those things together, and I'm proud of it because there are things that are my personality, but there's some of Zach's personality, Jairo's, Juan's, Andrea's,
and
so it's collaborative with the team, the selections Absolutely. That you guys make.
Absolutely.
Do you taste a lot of wines together and then decide who you're bringing in?
We do taste a lot of wines together and decide who we're bringing in at any point in time. Now, there are some things that, like, if this is available, it's on the list. Correct. And Cellbox wines are always on the list.
We've had Pride Mountain Vineyards, where I also work.
Always.
Since I first set foot in here. Was that from, like, day one?
It's pretty much
the
day
Berlot.
One. Yeah, I can't remember all the way back then, but if it wasn't on day one, maybe it was day five.
Yeah.
And we love Pride Mountain Merlot. We think it is as delicious a Merlot as possible. It also allows us to juxtapose for people. This thought that Merlot in Napa Valley is some lesser grape.
Still,
one movie. One movie.
I talk about it multiple times a week with guests, still telling the story.
And it's crazy because, like, at Pride, just at Gargiulo and at one time at Schaefer, the grapes don't come in and you say, put the Cabernet there so we can take better care of it. Put the Merlot over there in the sun so it turns
we'll
into a bad wine.
We'll use the old destemmer for the Merlot.
Correct. And so people say, what do I do when I look at a wine list? The first thing I do is I go to the Merlot section and see what the best buy on the list is, because the Merlot is going to be the best buy on the list, because you can't get as much for your Merlot as you can for your Cabernet.
Correct.
But it has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with the time or the quality of the wine. It's just that Merlot grapes, for whatever crazy reason, movies and other things, are not as expensive per ton as Cabernet.
I always tell people, too, when you look at a cluster of Cab and you look at a cluster of Merlot, the day that you pick, Cab is tiny, smaller, you get less juice, you need more grapes to get a bottle. You need more aging to calm down the tannin. Merlot, you get a little juicier. Cost of production, you can measure that a little bit, too, between the two, but perception. Pride, I've worked there for so long and I'm close to the family that just on behalf of the Pride family, I will say thank you for introducing the world at Disney Springs to Pride Merlot. We know it, we love it, we thank you for that.
I had a person in three nights ago whose family is deep in the Spanish wine business, and she tried L'Evangile next to Pride. And you know, L'Evangile's a pretty expensive, well-known wine. And she's, wow, that Pride Mountain's pretty freaking good. And I'm like, yeah, it is, right?
And it retails for $68.
There's a lack of a zero, maybe two zeros on the price.
Yeah. Michael, I feel like you have a question.
Yeah, I got like a two-part question, because I think it might be easier here. You get a lot younger demographic that comes here to your wine bar. Do you think, because like how you guys sell it from an ounce to a glass to a bottle, I don't see you here like wine walls, like it's starting to pop up everywhere, right? Where all the bottles are in machinery.
Yeah.
Do you feel that is going to help the newer generations bridge that gap? Or do you feel they're going to lose something because they don't get it the way you do it here?
All right. So I'm not against the enigmatic machines and in the right application.
I learned about wine. Down the I-4 at the wine room.
Yep.
How I learned about it. So, you didn't exist yet.
Here. In the right application, they're brilliant. My thought process here is I could have very easily put up walls of wine, and it probably would be easier to run. But I'm as much about an interaction between human beings as I am about a machine on the wall that you stick your credit card in. And I'd much rather train a team of servers over a long period of time and be in the restaurant and have my certified sommeliers, my advanced sommeliers, my sommeliers that are sitting for the master sommelier, working the floor, talking to guests, making a personal connection, and helping everybody on their journey in the wine world, then pull it out of the machine, put your phone on the QR code, and it'll pop up your description for the wine. Yeah, but that doesn't tell the whole story. Yeah. And I'm not against them, and in the right application, they're brilliant. It's just not the application I want. That's a personal thing.
I just see them now starting to pop up a little bit more here and there. I just wanted you to feel it. I personally like the personal touch, too, because you can't ask these questions to the machine.
No, you can't, can you?
You can't ask, how's this? Or you're pairing it with some cheese or something else.
Correct.
So, yes, I do understand that. And this is why I said I love this wine bar.
Do you feel like a $500 bottle of wine is five times better than a $100 bottle of wine? And I ask this question, let me give the context, because I know one of the amazing, unique things that you offer to guests here is they can taste first growth Bordeaux and some of like an ounce of some of these very expensive things. So just, can you talk a little bit to the pricing on some of those things for a general wine enthusiast.
So I do get people come in the restaurant who actually know a little bit about wine, and they're like, look at the price of Lafite at $150 an ounce or $3,500 for a bottle, and they're like, that's stupid, I'd never buy it. And on one level, I totally understand. But then on another level, the reason that I sell it, and I sell it with pride, is that guy Thomas Jefferson, you heard of him?
Oh yeah, I heard of him.
All right, so Thomas, during his time, was one of the great party animals of the world, and he'd go to France, and at that time, like Vegas, what went on in France stayed in France.
Except but, I think some Cunnings came home in suitcases.
Yes, okay.
That came home, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And so they knew what tasted good all the way back in the 1700s and what tasted better than other places who were making the same thing. And so if we think about the market for fine wine in the 1700s, you had Western Europe and you had this tiny demand in the Eastern United States and maybe tiny demand, even more tiny in South America. And that was demand.
Yeah.
And now demand is everywhere on a much more global scale. And while Lafite probably makes more wine now than they did in the 1700s, not exponentially to the number of people that there are in the world who are interested in good wine. So if you want to have what has universally been considered one of the greatest wines for the last, 200 plus years, that's different than saying I want to have this wine that's only been made for 20 years. And demand is demand. Supply and demand drives what that cost is. And if some point in time the world starts to think that it's not worth that much, the value will go down. I enjoy drinking Lafite.
Particularly
when y'all are paying. No,
I thought that's what we were tasting today.
What's wrong with him? And so the question to me isn't, is it worth five times as much? No, I can drink Philip Tony 01 Cabernet against 01 Bordeaux's. And I think Mr. Tony's wines, they're going to hold up as well as, if not better than some of the 01 Bordeaux at a far lesser price. But while Mr. Tony's been making wine in Napa since, I think it's 1953, the vineyard hasn't been in operation since the 1700s. And so I do, when their time comes around, that you got to put your money up to drink a first growth or one of the great Burgundies or whatever it may be, I do think it's worth the money if that's what you're into.
Especially at an ounce, not having
correct.
To come into a bottle.
That's the
beauty. That's amazing that you offer that to people. Have you ever had a guest, whether it's one of those ounces or just anything that you share with people, have you had guests be brought to tears from a wine?
I don't know about brought to tears from a wine. I think I've had a couple guests who've been brought to tears by the experience of being able to come here and have a non-confrontational learning experience across maybe eight wines that they've only dreamed of tasting. Yeah, I had a guy who showed up and sat at that table right over there, and I'm from Germany. I read about what you do. I've always wanted to taste Grange Hermitage, and I've always wanted to taste a first growth. And so he came in, he got a $15 sandwich and a 2 ounce pour of those two wines and said, this is one of the greatest afternoons of my life.
Yay.
All right. That's really cool. But see, it's obviously into wine, but I'll have our buying a bottle of Grange and a bottle of Lafite would have been a $5,000 effort. But the restaurant, allowed him to do something that he'd only dreamed of.
That's amazing.
It's pretty cool.
That is cool. Thank you for doing that.
It is cool.
It just makes it accessible, and it's amazing.
Not to, what is the Spider-Man, with great power comes great
responsibility.
All right. I'm going to make a play on that. Not exactly. I'm not saying I'm Peter Parker, but
you're my Peter Parker.
My wife and I have this restaurant that's at Disney Springs. A lot of people come into the Springs. So there is an obligation, a responsibility to do something that is not just the normal place.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that we do something here that is not just what everybody would expect out of a solid wine bar. There is the responsibility of doing something cooler and better.
There's nothing normal about what you're doing here in a wonderful way.
But I don't forget that it's still food and it's still beverage.
Okay.
And it has to be real and good. So I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and we have fun doing it too. Yeah. Like we're smiling when we do it.
Yeah.
And it's not so overwrought with craziness that I'm at this white tablecloth place where you can't make a noise. Nah, we have fun.
And the guy who had those 2 1-ounce pours had a sandwich, mm-hmm. not a caviar.
No, it was cool.
Good for him.
It was really cool.
I love it.
I love it too.
That leads me to another listener question. This is question number 2 from Jeff. Jeff had a lot of questions. He's a big fan. He lives awesome. In California, but just so you know, every time he's in Orlando for business, he's here sitting at your bar.
Good looking and intelligent guy.
He is. You've probably met Jeff multiple times. Jeff wants to know, what is the most surprising wine and food pairing that you enjoy?
Let me think about this. Was there something
that gives you Remy, Ratatouille,
yes,
animated fireworks in your brain?
So I will say that I don't drink that much dessert wine.
I was like, we should just cut the podcast right there. He says, I must say, I don't drink that much.
No, I drink a lot of wine. Yes.
It's more too.
I drink more than my share of wine.
We all do.
But dessert wines are, they open up a bottle, and even if you have a Corvin, the opportunity doesn't present itself.
Yes. Yeah.
But when you have a really good piece of blue cheese, maybe a triple creme blue or Stilton that's just right, and a dessert wine, whether it's Chateau Cam or Baron Alsace or Dolce.
Farniente.
Yes, that and blue cheese are this like, why didn't somebody tell me about this long ago? Because if I want to do something cool, whether it's just Leanne and I, or if it's with a group, I'll blow anybody's mind with that pairing.
Even the people that are like, I don't like blue cheese, right?
Yeah.
Like, just try
Just try this. Or people say, I don't like dessert wines. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you to drink a glass.
Yes.
Take a sip.
Take a sip and have some fun, because there is beauty and things that are very special there.
I agree from experience. Do you offer that here? You have beautiful cheese boards here.
So when we get people who are interested in dessert wines in particular, sometimes we might even bring out the blue cheese just to bring out the blue cheese with it.
I love it. Michael's rolling his eyes over there because he is in the school of, I don't like blue cheese, but yet gorgonzola on a pizza and he's going to town. And
no,
I'm
not
like,
gorgonzola.
It's the same family. Blue vein, Michael. Blue vein cheese. Same family.
Okay.
Do you have a question?
No, I'll just agree to disagree on that one.
Okay, moving on.
Everybody has their thing.
One more listener question.
Listener questions.
This one's from Scotty. Scotty's a nurse, and I actually hosted him at Pride a couple months ago, him and his partner, and we started talking about Disney, and they started going on and on about you and Wine Bar George, and they're big fans, and they listened to the podcast. He wanted to know, what is a wine that you open for comfort? It's just something's not right and you just are having a moment. You need a comfortable wine to feel good. What are you drinking? I love how he looks at this wall of wine that's behind us.
I'm looking at my wall of wine.
Yes.
And we'll go from bigger picture and then funnel down. I love Rioja, and if I'm having, whether it's a hamburger or a steak or beef tartare, or which are also comfort foods to me. I don't eat them all the time, but yeah, there's something about that. I find Tempranillo to be delicious, and those Spaniards like eating their beef. But I'm gonna go a little bit off center on it. Toro is a wine region that when you go there, they're pretty sure they were the original place that Tempranillo was grown. And in the 16, 17, and most of the 1800s, if you're Spanish royalty, you drank Tempranillo from Toro. Mm. Rioja became ascendant for a number of reasons. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. Toro still makes brilliant wine, and interestingly enough, in a style that Americans love, because it is a little bit just slightly more New World-y is maybe the easiest way to put it. Mm. And then there's a specific wine, Vatan Arena, is all 120-year-old vines and very expensive. Regular Vatan is all 80 to 100-year-old vines and around $100 on my list. And so I always have Vatan in my cellar. I have a little bit of Vatan Arena. So if I really need comforting, it might be Vatan Arena. If it's a moderate amount of comforting, it'd be the regular Vatan.
Okay, okay, heard.
Whether it's a burger or a ribeye, I'm like good anywhere in between that also. And this thought of Older vines just make better wine, and a lot of times that better wine is about mouthfeel more than it is about flavor or anything that the winemaker does in the winery. It's just that product, while maybe the vine doesn't put out as much, the vine has something about it where...
It's well-trained.
It
knows what it's doing.
And it's yummy.
50 and 80 and 100. Yes. And it's old, yummy vines.
Correct. And so I love Tempranillo. It's always a nice hug when I'm not feeling all that happy.
Oh, he said Tempranillo was a hug.
Vatan is like a good hug.
It's an embrace.
Yes. There's some all hugs are good, but there's some hugs that are better than others.
Amen to that.
And the Vatan hug is my favorite
Amen to that. Michael, you know anything about Tempranillo or Rioja that you would like to share?
I just went and visited Caro and went up there for
good times.
It was beautiful up there. Drank a lot
without me, George. You went without me. We did a med cruise. We're all over Spain, Italy, France, Sicily together. And then I got to fly home and go back to work. He's, I'm going to stay in Spain, go search out my people. Yeah. He went to the town Briones, which is his last name.
Very nice.
And sought that out, which is in Rioja. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, got to taste a little bit difference in the Tempranillo out there and all the grapes out there. It was beautiful.
We love Tempranillo. We love Rioja.
Juan Muga was like, go to the gin bar. And I, if Juan Muga tells me to go somewhere, I'm going.
Those croquetas in that town were by far some of the best ones I've ever had. I don't know if it was the wine really talking good. Or the, but they were great.
We had Juan Muga's Muga earlier this week at Toledo Restaurant at Coronado. We had two bottles of Muga, and it was great.
They know how to make wine.
On the table. Is there anything that we haven't talked about or highlighted?
At the wine bar, we are a restaurant and wine bar, so we got great food too. But if you are interested in wine, 220 choices, all available by the bottle, the glass, or the ounce. And the person that's going to come pour for you is going to know what they're talking about and doing. So if you're interested in wine, please come by and see us. We'd love to have you in and talk some wine smack.
Yeah, wine smack. Yeah. What percentage of your staff are at some level of some certification?
All the managers are at some level of some certification, and they're probably another 12 servers out of the 20 servers that are at some level of wine surf.
There's a lot of flashcards floating around.
There's a lot of flashcards floating around this statement.
I was going to say also, your great thing about your events that you host for your tastings, that's another thing that's really great.
You know? And it's, if you're interested in wine and you like learning and you want to know a little bit about blind tasting and being a master sommelier, it tastes like a master that program or experience that we do. You can find it on the Disney experience. Just put in sommelier or wine tasting and it'll pop up. It's good times, and I do them all, so you will have George
teaching. Do you sleep, George?
I do.
Come meet George. He's great. Yeah. I would love to take that
next
time we're here.
Thank you so much.
And I'm going to share, obviously, the Instagram for the restaurant is fantastic. Your tutorials that you do there and on YouTube. You just talked about Thanksgiving wine on there. You give tutorials about the right way to open a bottle, which so many people need to watch. So I will share links for all of these things so that our listeners can come and check you out. But I just want to thank you for what you're doing, because as someone who wine has really changed my life, to the fact that I left this place, Orlando, place that I loved and thought I was going to be forever working for this company. I got into wine. I moved out there. It has been completely life-changing, but I'll always come back here and sit at your bar and have an ounce or two of something.
Awesomeness.
Thank you for sharing this beautiful Beaujolais. It has opened up
beautifully.
It's delicious. It's mouthwatering. And just thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
And thank you for photographing and videoing. Cheers. That's okay.
All the best for the holidays, too.
Woo.
Yay.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Definitely one of those pinch me moments. I still cannot believe that Michael and I got to spend that time with George. I want to say a huge thank you to him. I know, George, that you're so busy, and this was such a special treat. Also, a shout out to our good friend Anne, who joined us and was taking video and photography during our interview. If you've seen any of the promos on social media, that is thanks to Anne, and it was so lovely having her join us as well. So if you are heading to Walt Disney World or even just the Orlando area, definitely encourage you to check out Wine Bar George. Check out their website. I'll put the link in the show notes to sign up for one of George's 90-minute How to Taste Like a Master Sommelier classes. If you're swinging through Terminal C in the Orlando airport, have a delicious cheese board and a glass of wine. At the end of our time together, we gave George a bottle of our Solovato Sangiovese, and that was also a little bit of a surreal moment. If you're not aware, Michael and I have a small wine label that we started in 2019, where we make Sangiovese from Dry Creek here in Sonoma County. And I was able to share a bottle with George, and I can't wait to hear his review. If you'd like to try our Solovato Sangiovese, the link is in the show notes. We can ship to most states. And if you use the discount code PODLISTENER, we'll give you 10% off your order. It is a medium-bodied red wine made from the Sangiovese grape, so in an Italian style. It's fruity, it's spicy, and it just won a gold medal at 94 points in the California Wine Competition. As always, if you have enjoyed this episode, please share, share, share. Share this episode. You can text it as a link from most podcast platforms. And please take a moment and leave us a rating or a review in whichever platform you are listening in. Don't forget, you can be an angel and support the podcast with a donation. Link is in the show notes to do that as well. And buy Michael and I a glass of wine. Whatever you do between now and next week, I hope that you sip well.